Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. This is a little bit of organizational matters here, but Donald Trump appeared before the United Nations last week, among all the things going on. And speaking to the United Nations, he touted the accomplishments of his administration, which drew a curious response from the delegates at the UN.
1 year ago, I stood before you for the first time in this grand hall. I addressed the threats facing our world, and I presented a vision to achieve a brighter future for all of humanity. Today, I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
That's President Trump appearing before the UN. Later, he and his administration said that people were laughing with him, not at him. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Skyline studio is Democratic State Comptroller Susana Mendoza. Madam Comptroller, thank you for joining me.
Sure. Good morning, everyone.
So the Democratic Party established this panel of women to take a look at issues involving sexual harassment and how they're dealt with from the political organizational side.
Right.
And of course, you know, political campaigns don't have an HR. You know, and here in the burgeoning Me Too movement, we've seen issues in both Republican Party, Democratic Party involving harassment issues. And so you and Melinda Bush, State Senator, and State Representative Carol Ammons were charged with putting this panel together and to basically come up with recommendations on how to handle it, on how this should be dealt with. Tell me one about just the process that led to the recommendations that you're now issuing.
Sure. Well, thanks for that question. The process is really important because it's really generally what informed the report. And that process was that we went to six different cities across the state of Illinois. We were in Rockford, in Chicago, in Springfield, in Edwardsville, in Carbondale, and where am I missing? Did I say Spring? Oh, Champaign-Urbana. And we met with hundreds of women from both parties, by the way, who came to share their stories, but also their recommendations, what they would think would be things that should change within the campaign structure to, number one, provide a safe environment for women to feel comfortable working in, right? So that you're not constantly worrying about being sexually harassed or knowing how you should handle that if that situation were to arise. But then also, what ended up happening was I think we really kind of began this panel with a thought that it was all going to be about sexual harassment and how to deal with that. But the women who came to these sessions, frankly, not that we lost focus or shift of that, because we didn't. It was always first and foremost. But it really became more of an issue of, in order to ever be able to say that we are working towards eradicating the issue of sexual harassment, the entire culture needs to change. And the only way that that will change is if more women get elevated into positions of power where they're the ones, frankly, making the rules that think of women while they're making them, right?
So empowerment to be in leadership positions because it's the leadership
that makes the
that
rules.
Exists now.
Yeah. So you think about, like, for example, look what's happening. It's never been more timely. You know, our report was dropped, and then the next day it was at the Kavanaugh hearings, right? And you look at the makeup of that Senate Judiciary panel. Certainly on the Republican side, there's not a single woman, right? Everyone looks exactly the same. You could take one guy and just substitute him for the other. They even look the same, right? And these are people that were listening to testimony during the Anita Hill days. Like, not much has changed. No lessons have been learned. But I really, truly believe, as do most women with rational thought, that if that Senate Judiciary Panel looked more reflective of the actual population and had more women on it, or people of color, that they would be looking at this process in a very different way. And so,
well, even in some respects, that was acknowledged because the Senate Republicans that control the panel had the questioning of Dr. Ford done by a woman.
Yeah, which, by the way, was a total scam, because as soon as she was done questioning, they were, I would say, very cowardly, that they weren't willing to do it themselves. Yet then when Judge Kavanaugh came before them, they didn't need the person that they, remember, called the assistant, right? She would be assisting. This is like a professional, successful prosecutor who they pretty much deemed as just an assistant, which is so typical, right? But at the end of the day, she was necessary for them to not come off as the aggressors that they would have been with Dr. Ford. Yet when it was time to speak with or interview Judge Kavanaugh, it was almost like a cheering squad. These guys didn't need the prosecutor anymore because, hey, you know, they were just there to apologize to Judge Kavanaugh for the ill treatment that he had received. And it was such a contrast to how Dr. Ford was treated by that very same panel.
So you say the issue goes to really empowerment, in, yep, as far as empowerment for women to change the culture.
Well, the rules, that even the laws, right? So when you talk about, there's a difference between rules and there's a difference between laws, but in the context of the political world, you think about all these laws that impact women, certainly in the issue of sexual harassment, like statute of limitations issues, right? What even constitutes sexual harassment? Keep in mind that all of these laws have been in place for so long. And who are the people primarily making the laws? These laws were made by men for men. There's very few women in legislatures or in the congressional or Senate bodies. So when the majority is making these rules, the majority is essentially men making rules that impact men more so than from the victim's perspective, oftentimes who is female. So again, this concept of, if we really want to change this stuff, it's not going to be one or two laws. It has to be like a seismic shift. And that means that women should be properly reflected, because in the population, we make up over 50% of the population on a national level and in a state level. And why are we so underrepresented when it comes to the people that are actually making the rules or the laws that impact so many women across this state?
So what needs to be, I mean, obviously,
so the parties,
how do you promote women?
So that's the problem, right? And this is what we were discussing, and or it's a huge problem. And in order to get beyond that, the parties need to make an unabashedly intentional move to elevate women within the party structures. And that's both Democrats and Republicans, or you could extend that to Libertarians and Greens. And what that means is that we make a couple recommendations. Number one, to require diversity in a pool of potential applicants or people that are being considered to fill, let's say, vacancies, right? Or to run for offices against current incumbents. Part of the way you do that is we recommend that the parties hire their own directors of diversity. These folks would be specifically charged with trying to identify talent, female talent, diversified talent, right? People, depending on what part of the state you're in, folks that could run on the LGBTQ platform, people with disabilities, women, and then find them, identify them, but more importantly, get the parties then to actually invest in training these women and in putting real dollars behind their candidacy so that they actually have a fighting chance. So many of the women who have gotten as high as the Illinois legislature, for example, got there by running against the established party structures. And once they won, it's, you know, way more often than not that the parties do a really good job, both the Democratic and Republican parties, of supporting their elected female candidates. But remember, they didn't get there necessarily with the help of the party in many instances. Now, if Illinois is currently ranked 6th in the country for most women in the legislature, we have a total of 35% of our House and Senate combined are women. Yet we, of course, make up over 50% of the population. Now, we're ranked 6th best, but we need to be number one. And so I'd really love to see, and I'm speaking for Carol and Melinda as well here, and all of the women who came to these panels, that Illinois could become and should become the first state in the country to flip its legislature female majority. And that would be a game changer, and it would set the tone for what's going to happen in the rest of the country.
What is the ratio in the number one state?
So Nevada is, if they were to win, they're 39%. So no one's like super close. They're just a few points ahead of us. And Nevada is poised right now that if every woman who is running for office in their state for the legislature wins, that they would be the first state in the country to flip female majority. But we don't really believe that every woman who is running, like 100% of them will win, which still gives Illinois a chance to get moving. And I guess the best example of why I think we can do this is that the three women on that panel, Melinda Bush, myself, and Carol Ammons, all three of us got elected by running against the party. I mean, you know this story, Rick. I think people may not know it, but it took me two tries to make it into the state house. Both times I ran against a candidate that was supported fully by the Speaker of the House, right? So it's not easy to do that, but eventually I won. And then once you're there, like I said, all of the women that make it have party support. But if you think of the fact that all three of us got to the legislature and make up part of that, you know, 35% or whatever, we got there by swimming upstream. Imagine what the numbers could be in Illinois if the parties intentionally put resources behind women the first time, like went out and actually recruited women to run for these key spots. And when there was a vacancy, for example, when Christine Rodonia, the highest ranking female in the Republican Party, decided to retire, there was a group of 10 men waiting to get replaced or get put in that position, and they didn't even really essentially look at female candidates. Like, that is a missed opportunity. It reduces that number down from 35%. But more importantly, we're moving in the opposite direction of how we should be moving in Illinois, but we can change that.
We're speaking with Democratic State Comptroller Susana Mendoza about the panel that the Democratic Party put together and their recommendations on dealing with sexual harassment and promotion of women into political leadership roles. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, joined here in studio by Susana Mendoza. She is the Democratic State Comptroller. We're talking about issues involving the panel that she served on and recommendations with how to deal with sexual harassment. But we did have a caller briefly who just, after the talk about trying to get to a 50-plus-1 majority of women in the General Assembly, mm-hmm. who wanted to know, do you believe only women should run?
No, not at all. I think, you know, everybody who thinks that they can make a difference in the world should run or in their state. I do, though, feel, though, that when people say that, there's like an expectation that we're trying to treat women unfairly or give them an unfair advantage. And it's just not the case. We just want to be treated as equals. And we, frankly, do make up more of the population than the men do. But we're woefully underrepresented and have been our entire history. So I just, what we're saying is it's time to even the field, the playing field, and that women should have just as strong or an equal voice as the men do.
Let's talk about some of these recommendations. And as you were saying off air, political campaigns they're kind of short-lived operations.
Yeah, they're short-lived. So unlike your traditional workplace, like we're here, somebody could work here for, you know, 10 months or 10 years or more and would know where to report because there's an HR department or stuff like that. In campaigns, they might last 2 weeks to at most maybe like a year and a half, right, before the campaign's over. You know, there might be an incident that happens towards the end of a campaign and the campaign is over before you even have a legit chance to report it. So it's not feasible to have campaigns have their own HR systems, but it is for like the political party structures themselves, right? And that's why we're recommending that, number one, the parties as a whole adopt clear and non-negotiable policies that go beyond the law. Because, Rick, another thing is that campaign workers and volunteers and independent contractors are not even covered under current workplace laws. So that's why this is a whole gray area. And we have to establish new rules that, you know, are more like policies and cultures that campaigns adopt for their own campaigns, but that also the parties themselves could do things like provide anti-harassment training to everyone that's involved in a campaign. And then here's the best part. If those campaigns that are running for office tomorrow don't want to abide by these sexual harassment trainings, they don't think it's that important, then we want the parties to tie funding and resources to campaigns based on whether or not they adopt policies and participate in these trainings. That's a huge difference. You think you're too cool and that you know everything you need to know about, or frankly, you don't really respect women or your campaign workers, then don't expect to get any support or resources from the parties. We have to be intentional about making this change happen. And then the other cool thing that we did was we came up with, we're saying that you need to really develop responsible and reasonable, I would say, policies for consensual romantic relationships and alcohol use.
I thought that was a very interesting topic for you guys to address because of the nature of campaigns.
Yeah, they're so short-lived, but they're also social by nature. A lot of time people meet on campaigns or they even join campaigns. It's kind of like, I don't want to say like to meet and date other people, but that's just the reality of what happens. But we also, because we acknowledge that these are social and fun, ideologically driven social groups, right, that things happen when there's alcohol prevalent at fundraisers or at parties and long nights, people working in close proximity to each other for, you know, a very intense period of time, that, you know, people enter into these romantic relationships or people ask people out. And what we're saying is that's okay, but be responsible about it. We've kind of instituted this one ask rule. And the one ask rule is this: if you're interested in somebody, you want to ask that person out, you know, go ahead, but you only get one try. And if you get anything other than an unequivocal yes, it's a no. And don't ask again. Now, there's a second opportunity for you. If, let's say, it's you ask a girl out and she says no, or I want to think about it, that means no. But then she changes her mind. Well, it's 2018. It'll be 2019 next year, right? She can ask you out. She gets one try. If you change your mind, you don't want to date her anymore, done. So the whole point is, you know, take no as an answer and stop right there. And if you have this one ask rule, people know the rules. They don't have to ask about what the rules are. You know I'm going into this, and just follow them. That's all we're asking.
And this is, as you use the term, parties, plural. This is designed to be party neutral.
Oh, for sure. We really hope that every major party, and in Illinois, there's really two big, huge ones, and that's, of course, the Democrats and the Republicans. But the Libertarians and the Green parties, as they grow in size and scope here, can take these recommendations and run with them, and even, we would hope, improve upon them. But this is not something that we want for Democrats. It's something we want for women. And women come in all shapes and colors and all party labels. And this is really meant to help women feel more comfortable getting involved in a space that they care about, which is politics and the future of our states.
That's Democratic State Comptroller Susana Mendoza. Madam Comptroller, thank you so much for joining me this
morning. Thanks for having me, always.